Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. We're here, we're queer, and we don't want any more bears.
Maybe you are. I'm not.
Wait, you're a bear? Or you don't want any more bears?
I wouldn't mind some gummy bears. I wouldn't mind a beer that tasted like gummy bears. Does that make any sense?
No.
Is that good?
No, I don't want a beer that tastes like gummy bears. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I am, of course, Nick.
I'm Justin, and welcome to the Epic Film Guys podcast. You know, we used to do this intro just like this, where we introduced ourselves, and then for a little while we didn't do it, and then Emily from the story behind was like, nope, you guys have to bring that back because it's much better with it
last night.
Emily,
ooh, Emily, getting
necessary.
Fresh there. Oh
wow.
My god,
jeez,
that's early on in the show. How many glasses of wine has she already had?
Four or five.
Oh. But dude, yeah, it's been a while. We're doing something special with this episode this evening. We're actually doing it live in the sense that you're not going to really edit it, right?
I am not going to edit it whatsoever. You probably heard me haphazardly fade out of the intro music into the actual intro of the show there. And that's not even like the normal intro, because it doesn't have like the bass drop thing that starts it off that I have in the normal track. So I got to swap that out on the soundboard. But yeah, I have been working like a madman. I, of course, live in New York State, which got hit by one nor'easter on Friday of last week. And then I don't really know how the storm's going right now. We're getting hit by another one right now. And downstate just got pummeled, tens of thousands of people without power. So I have been working literally all of the overtime, taking outage calls and whatnot. So I've worked, I don't know, something like, it's funny because Justin mentioned this back during the patron only segment, but when we worked at 21st Century, we worked four 10-hour days, and then every single day we didn't have to work, Justin and I went in and worked a full shift of overtime, like legit. So we would work like 60, 70 hours a week all the time. And that's kind of how I feel right now, because that's how much I have worked. I've already put in like 40-some hours this week, and I'm probably going to put in even more just by the time it's all over, just because, you know, you got to be there to take those calls, and it's really good money. It's really
I'm
good
sure,
money
dude.
On top of it. So yeah, it's tough. I know it's got to be frustrating for people to be without power for a few days, but yeah. So I'm dead tired, and we didn't miss.
Please do not disturb my friend. He's dead tired.
we didn't get to record on our normal recording night. Sometimes we'll back up on Tuesdays if we can't for whatever reason on Mondays. And no, we're recording literally the night before release. The show goes live in like 8 hours.
Cutting it close, man.
So I'm just gonna, as soon as we're done, I'm smashing it together and pushing it right out there to you guys. So whatever you're getting is raw, unfiltered. When Justin flubs, he's just gonna have to flub, and it's gonna sound like he's got a dick in his mouth. And no, I'm not gonna push that button, Justin. I'm not gonna do
no.
it.
No. I'm very
not
thankful
right now.
That you won't, man.
Not right now anyway.
Just
did you know?
Never, never.
But I want to play something for you actually here, Justin, before
okay,
we get into
right.
the rest of the show.
Sure.
This was from this week in EFG history. This was you and me talking about the soundboard. Here we go.
Thumbs down to Nick's new soundboard. I got this for you, Justin.
Fuck you, Pykele. You're a fucking piece of shit.
I'm smashing that thing. Seriously.
You ain't doing nothing.
Get some new sound clips. I'm sick of the same. It's only two episodes in. I'm already bored of them. I'm bored of it. I'm going to whoop you. I'm going to take that thing. I'm going to throw it.
Oh, my God.
I'll pay Emily for it. But
so, yeah. And nothing much has changed.
No, not at all. I still hear the same damn freaking clips every week, and I still, well, I feel like the past couple of weeks I've been really good at ignoring them. Oh, Sly showing up here too. Wow.
I know, you can't ignore Sly, man. But just as I've been so busy, and you, over the weekend, you were really, really busy, so you and I haven't gotten much chance to talk. I got to see a few films ahead of the Oscars, which we're going to talk about tonight, and you also got to check out a film in theaters that I know you wanted to talk about, but how the hell are you, man? What's going on in the world of Justin slash the Hopester?
I'm paying for my amazing weekend, Nick. My dream come true. I'm sick, but it's all so worth it. You're talking about working your ass off overtime because of the power outage, the bad weather. On Thursday evening, I got into work, and me and a few guys I'm good friends with went on our way to Columbus, Ohio, in the worst weather I could ever imagine to go meet Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's right. I had mentioned on the show last week I was doing something special. I kind of hinted at it the past couple weeks, but I did not want to jinx it because, you know, until it actually physically happens, Nick, I didn't want to ruin it for myself. I was worried and paranoid the entire fucking time to the point where I probably got slightly annoying to my friends that I went with because I was just so worried that something would ruin it. We were on our way. We left at about 8 o'clock from here in Herndon, Virginia, and we dealt with the winds were like 65 miles per hour. The snow, sleet, rain, huge fog. All of that added with the fact that we are riding in my buddy Jeremy's Hyundai Veloster. Now, Nick, I don't know if you've ever seen a Hyundai Veloster before, but it's like the tiniest little bug of a car you could ever drive. My buddy Jeremy's a small guy. He's like 5-something. Short dude. He knows it. Call him small fry. He won't get offended. And driving through, we added like 2 hours onto our time, man, because of that weather. So we were supposed to get there at 2. We didn't get there till like 4 in the morning.
So would you say, Justin, would you say?
Winter has come at last.
Dude, it certainly did. It was all so worth it to get through the blizzard to go meet Arnold Schwarzenegger over the weekend. The coolest shit ever was getting to the Columbus Expo Center where the Arnold Classic was held, and it was like 4 in the morning, dude. The streets were dead. No one was out. Literally, like, it was freezing cold. We pulled the car up right in front of the Expo Center, and there's like an Arnold statue, like a huge monument of him flexing, and we got out and took pictures in front of it, and it was like the most exciting thing in the world. Now, the event itself that I met him at, I will not reveal what that event is outside of my small circle of friends, only because I promised. But it was not at the Arnold Classic where I met Arnold Schwarzenegger, Nick, but it was probably the most exciting moment in my entire life. He did a speech at an event that I went to, and then we went to the next room. We got to meet him, shake his hand, get a photograph with him. And I got to tell you, man, like, I've never felt that excited to meet anybody. He was super down to earth. He's been my hero since I was 10 years old. And like I said on my Facebook page when I posted the photograph, which I also posted to our Facebook, if I could go back in time and tell my 10-year-old self that someday you'll be standing in a room taking a professional photograph with Arnold Schwarzenegger, shaking his hand, I would have never believed it. So, man, dream come true for me. But I paid for it, though. I got sick while I was there in Ohio. It was great.
I told you, he poisoned you.
Well, something, dude. There's like hundreds of thousands of people in town for the fitness expo. And and I did enjoy some good breweries, man. I went to 3 different breweries, nice. All of which at the moment, I don't remember the names of them. There's a nice cluster of them right in downtown Columbus. And we just kind of jumped around a little bit while we were down there. I was the only one really heavily drinking. And I made my buddy Brady, who also went with us, drink a little too much. And he ended up puking and falling asleep on a toilet. So sorry, Brady. Sorry about that. Well, but
Speaking of puking, Justin, and speaking of drinking, I think that means we got to get into a little thing that we love to do on this show called What Are You Drinking?
I'm back. Puking rally.
Woo. See, I don't normally do them live, so I can't talk over them. I'll usually still cut those in post, even though I have the soundboard. But yeah, Justin, why don't you let me know what you've got guzzling down that gullet this evening?
Well, this is a beer I've had many times.
Watch out,
Godzilla! I don't know if I've had it on the show before. It is the Aslan Beer Company's Double Orange Starfish. It is, of course, a double IPA. It's double dry hopped with Citra and Galaxy hops. I love it. I love anything that they do that's double dry hopped. I mean, literally, anytime they release anything that says double dry hopped and it's a double, I grab it. It's 8.3% alcohol by volume, and who the hell knows about the IBUs? They don't really count with an Aslan beer, and it's delicious. It's a beer that's one of their fan favorites. I love it. It's great. I'm drinking it, and I'm sure I'll drink maybe 2 or 3 more the rest of the show.
I've got to actually double dry hop the the dumpster juice. I already did one round of dry hopping. It gets transferred over into secondary, and then it gets another round of dry hopping. So it will also be double dry hopped as well. It's going to be super aromatic from that. That's why those Aslan beers, whenever you crack one of them open, you just get punched in the face with that amazing aroma.
To those that know the process, what exactly, Nick, what does it mean by double dry hopping?
Well, dry hopping goes in while it's fermenting, while it's just creating that alcohol. So you're not actually infusing flavor. All you're doing is aroma. It's all aroma. Like I said, when you open an Aslan beer, that's why you get punched straight in the face with that amazing aroma because of how much it's dry hopped. So hopefully my dumpster juice will turn out. I actually also today, Justin, stopped at the Doc's Homebrew and I picked up some Cascade hops to make my Heady Topper clone. And I picked up some lactose to make that milk chocolate stout that I want to make. I'm super excited. I'm going to get some more brews and some more beer tossed together. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be great.
But I'm hoping that you won't disappoint me, Nick. because the last time I talked to you on the show, you weren't drinking nothing. You didn't have shit. You didn't have nothing. So what the hell you got this evening? What are you drinking?
Drinking Drano.
Yes. Oh, man. You're not eating Tide Pods with that Drano, are you?
Well, you got to dunk them in something, man. It helps to break them up a little. No, this is a staple. Tried and true. You know I love it. I absolutely do. It is New Holland's Dragon's Milk Bourbon Barrel Aged Stout.
Oh,
I absolutely love this stuff. It is fantastic. I have a half-baked from Ellicott View. Or Ellicottville. All that fucking flubs, all that bullshit's going to stay on the show because I don't have time to cut it out.
It's natural. It's El Natural.
Damn it. But yeah, that the half-baked, it's like a peanut butter porter, and it's okay. It's not too bad, but I wanted to have Dragon's Milk for the show because a great show deserves a great beer, Justin. That's what we have, is a great show lined up for our amazing listeners, our amazing patrons, our amazing whoever. If you're a first-time listener to the show, welcome. Welcome.
You're amazing.
Rant about dumb shit on the show. We talk about all sorts of weird nonsense. Sometimes we talk about movies. We often talk about loy sauce, and we always talk about dicks.
You do. You love talking about them.
So far,
I'm getting
Emily.
Away from that.
Only Emily has mentioned dick tonight, so that's a good thing.
Keep it that way.
Who said that? I don't know where that keeps coming from. Oh, but yeah, super awesome. I saw that picture of Arnold, and of course I know, you know, it's been a dream of yours for a long, long time, even more than all the horror icons you've met and everything like that. I know that's been a super, super huge thing just for you to meet Arnold Schwarzenegger. So awesome. Very, very awesome.
Did you ask him if the vet gets him wet? No. I wish that I had more time, dude. But one of the cool things, and I'll make this quick because I know we're going to do a short show this evening. When we met, we tried to meet him again downstairs after the event to try to grab some autographs. And one of us was successful in that, and one of us was not. I'm the one that was not. but as he walked by, we were like, Arnold, Mr. Schwarzenegger, please sign. We came from DC. And he's like, thank you, guys. Nice to meet you. And then he just like walked by us. I was like, well, he talked to us again. So whatever. It's cool. He was super busy, dude. He's got his fitness expo. He came in with like a 10 dude security lineup. There was a bomb squad there with a bomb dog, a huge entourage. Like every cop in town was there to bring him to this thing that I was at again, which I will not say what it was. It was not the Arnold Classic. So it was cool to get anything out of him that we possibly could. But he did stiff me on an autograph. For some reason, Nick, he didn't want to sign a Predator Laserdisc. So maybe he thinks the same way that you do about Predator. I don't know.
Everyone should think the same way that I do about Predator.
No. But seriously, though. Yeah, he took one look at it, Nick. He put it in his hands. He took one look at it, gave it back to me, and drove away. So that was the end of my amazing,
man.
Amazing. Yeah.
God. Damn you, Schwarzenegger. Hey, you still got to meet him. That's all that you really wanted.
It's probably because they didn't put him in the new one. It's probably because they didn't write him a big enough role. That's why he turned it down.
Is that what it was?
Damn this Predator. Yeah, he was going to do it. Shane Black wanted him in it, and he said the role was too small, so he turned it down, supposedly.
I mean, what? No, Arnold, listen. Last time you got a major role in an aging franchise that you helped to make a massive success, it didn't turn out so well. Not that that was any fault of his, but, you know. Still.
Well, he's getting another chance at that this summer when they shoot the next Terminator.
Jesus Christ.
Well, no. They are. Hey, man, the fact that Tim Miller's involved has got to be something. I'm waiting to see. Whatever. Who cares? At this point, they're going to keep making them anyway. Yeah. We'll be 75, dude, in a fucking nursing home, and they'll be making Terminator 22 by that point, you know? Well, whatever.
Speaking of being in a nursing home, Justin, Oscar belongs in a nursing home now because Oscar turned 90 this year.
Yeah, man.
And we both watched the big show. You had some friends come over for a nice Oscar party. myself and my wife, I just did some recipes that I made up over on Restaurant that turned out great. And we watched the show. It was really, really fun. But why don't we talk about the Oscars a little bit? Why don't we get into what won, what lost? Any big surprises for you for the evening?
Honestly, I felt like it was the most safe Oscar show I've watched in a long time. Kimmel was fine. He didn't really do anything that made me laugh, anything outside of the jet ski bit, which kind of got old after a little while. I did love it. When he first did it, I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. but, you know, they had said previous to the show, they announced that it was going to focus on film and not politics. And I kind of disagree with that a little bit. But obviously, anyone that wins, and they made this apparent at the beginning of the show, Jimmy even came out and said it, like, when you're up here, you can say whatever you want. And it's your platform to really speak your mind and say what you have to say. But as far as the actual awards, Nick, nothing at all surprised me whatsoever. I will say right off the bat, just getting it out of the way, I said it as I posted on my Facebook page as I was watching it. I said, as long as Roger Deakins wins cinematography for Blade Runner 2049, I can go to bed comfortably. Yep. And he certainly did, and I was super happy. And you know, it was so funny about his speech, as he's kind of just like, okay, it's taken this goddamn long. I don't really have much to say. Thanks for finally giving it to me. And, you know, it was like very quick, but that was the only one that I really wanted to see win. But you know, he didn't put any much effort into his speech. He was like, yeah, whatever. Thanks. Finally.
It was great to see him win. It was great to see Dunkirk, of course, clean up in the editing awards and the sound mixing.
Yeah, the
sound
smaller editing stuff. Yeah.
Of course, it didn't get any love in any of the major awards, but Christopher Nolan never does. The acting categories were all insanely easy to call from 80 miles away. All the precursor awards kind of just, I mean, you knew. There was no challenger.
Well, this was when we talked about our picks, or we kind of, you know, estimated who we thought was going to win.
Yeah,
we were kind of like, Gary Oldman was a given. There was no question there. We all knew it. Everyone knew that.
Oh,
if
yeah,
you questioned it, you were probably like on LSD or something stronger. I like I said, I feel like I was happy with everything. I'm happy to see Del Toro walk away with Best Director, only because he's been an accomplished director for a long time. Yes, he's made a film that neither of us like, that we bash on the show a lot. But for the most part, he's a visionary director, the likes of which we don't see very often anymore in this day. And, you know, he's making a movie like this that gets a lot of love, and I was really happy about it. He's a genre director, and he's a sweet, lovable dude, and I thought the film was fantastic. It was my number one film of the year last year, so I had no problem with him winning director. Now, my question for you, though, did you like that, and how did you feel about The Shape of Water taking Best Picture?
You know, I was kind of up in the air. I didn't know if Three Billboards was going to carry the momentum that it's kind of had all through award season to take the big prize at the end of the night. I would have been happy either way, to be 100% honest. I mean, listen, if I'm being 100% honest, we all know I would have loved for Dunkirk to somehow dark horse its way in there and sneak away with it. Maybe with the split of the votes among 9 different films. But I knew there was probably no chance of it. I knew it was either going to be Shape of Water or Three Billboards, and I wasn't unhappy either way. I really, really wasn't. Darkest Hour, you're absolutely right. Oldman, one of the biggest surprises though for me, and Laurie Metcalf had like an outside shot, that was probably the closest acting race, was supporting actress. She had the smallest chance to win that award over Janney. But I mean, Lady Bird shut out, nothing, not a damn thing.
It goes back to what we say every year, Nick, where, you know, unfortunately for some of these people getting nominated, that is their award, is the nomination. And I was a little bit surprised by that, but at the same time, you know, something like seeing Jordan Peele get best original screenplay for Get Out.
What a wonderful
God
award.
Damn it, dude.
Yep.
The first African-American to win an Oscar for best original screenplay. And it's a great screenplay. I loved it. So the fact that it got something, I mean, I won't lie to you, when it gets to best picture, The Shape of Water winning, I was very happy about, but I kind of had hope, just like you had hope for Dunkirk, that maybe Get Out would sneak its way in there and be like, you know, because horror gets no love.
Yeah.
And whether you think that Get Out was horror, thriller, whatever it is, it's both. You know, there's elements of both strongly into that film.
In there, yep.
And it's got a deep commentary in that film as well. It's a very special film. I was hoping that it might sneak its way in there, because we know how the Academy loves to, you know, snub horror or anything thriller, or, you know, a lot of times even science fiction stuff. And there was that whole thing that hit, that whole news that landed last week, that a lot of people in the Academy, the older people that are in the Academy, were actually just not going to watch Get Out just because. Like they were just refusing to watch it because of what it was. Did you hear that?
No, I didn't hear that. But thankfully, you know, as all these younger people, you know, women and minorities join the Academy, you know, and kind of come up through and, you know, those old people die off, you know. I mean, it is what it is. You know, it's going to lead to, you know, a lot more diverse voting body for the Academy. I mean, it's they've taken some great strides in the past couple of years. I mean, we've been doing this show long enough now that we remember a couple of years ago when the whole Oscar so white thing was such That's a big right. deal. And now you've got, you know, women, first female cinematographer ever was nominated. Greta Gerwig nominated for both writing and directing for Lady Bird. I mean, a lot of minority actors were nominated this year. I mean, it was great to see all that diversity.
Minority director won Best Director.
Yeah, very true. So. Very, very true. So it was really, really great to see that kind of stuff. And you know what? It's and I say this about, you know, politics in the country and stuff like that all the time too. But you know, these older people start dying off, and things are probably going to get a lot better.
I mean, hey man, maybe by the time we're older, it'll be better. You know, maybe, you know, the more and more we get older, because we're getting old. Let's face it.
Theoretically,
if we keep doing this thing, but
sorry, boomers, you know, any baby boomers out there that listen to the show.
Yeah, the one or two that we have. Sorry. But other than that, like, I feel like, you know, Frances winning for Three Billboards, that was a given.
That was great.
I didn't see anything else coming in. And, you know, Sam Rockwell, also Three Billboards coming in for his Best Supporting.
Yeah.
He probably was
huge
my favorite Best Supporting of the year. Honestly, I can't lie.
Yeah.
But I was a little bit upset about Allison Janney winning for I, Tonya. I loved her in the film, but I just thought that Laurie had a more powerful performance in Lady Bird. And I was just really hoping that that would take home some award.
I think that's what I'm more upset about. It's not, I mean, because, I mean, Allison Janney's royalty. I mean, she is.
No, she's great in the film, man. She is.
But it's one of those things where you would have been happy either way with who won. But I think the only reason I wanted it to win something was because I wanted Lady Bird to win something, because I did love it so much. And, you know, it was, you know, one of those things where it kind of sucks that it walked away with nothing. But yeah, overall, like I said, I don't think it was all that, you know, controversial. There was nothing about it that really was like, what the hell is this? I thought,
well, I mean, they got the awards, right?
What's so that?
I loved when Del Toro won at the end and he checked the envelope and turned
that
it
was
around.
Great.
And,
that was a great moment. I'm
like, thank God. Yeah. I mean, like last year with the whole, you know, the wrong film being awarded Best Picture and everything. So, it was so safe to the point where Nick, I could have fallen asleep during parts of it, to be honest with you, dude.
Yeah, and I was doing our little video updates over in the Hopesters Zone, so those are still over there. So if you want to go check those out, you can, even though my lighting was a little bit too bright.
I will not.
You will, and you will like it. God damn it.
Poor Tommy Wiseau.
I'm so
he didn't
happy
make his
I
way to the Oscars.
He was my best friend.
Did you see his exchange with Mark Hamill? He said, oh, hi, Mark. Could you please help me get into the Oscars?
I sent you that. I sent you the screenshot on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
That's
really
what it
funny.
Was.
Speaking of Mark Hamill, and I love Mark Hamill to death, and I love he's getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, which is amazing, but not that big of a fan of the Star Wars actor presentations. It was kind of flat for me.
It was totally flat. Yeah. I love
it
seeing
just,
BB-8
just
come out
flat.
And everything.
Yeah, the BB-8 stuff was funny, but like I don't know. I think you could have just had Mark Hamill and BB-8 up there. Probably it probably would have played better.
No, it sucks too, because I mean, I loved everybody that was up there, Nick, but it was really, I agree with you. I was like,
it felt over rehearsed. It felt overly stagey. It didn't have like a kind of looseness or like a fun element to it, which really made me sad. You know,
yeah,
we've got Last Jedi, what, like 8 days now or 7 days or whatever. It comes out on digital, I think, about a week or so.
Yeah,
like next week,
and just be prepared, ladies and gentlemen, because those of you that did like the film will have a chance, of course, to win a digital code for the 4K once it comes out.
Ooh.
Just like, you know, all the other stuff I'm throwing your way. It's going to be coming your way as
Baby.
Well. I can't wait to actually check that out on 4K.
You're going to get nuts.
But if you had one presenter or presenters that you thought were the best of the show, who would you pick, Nick? Right off the top of your head, if you did have one. Because I was kind of trying to like, who did I really love that really?
I don't even know. I don't even know. Nope, I got nothing. It was that kind of a year where it was just like nothing about
that's
it
what
was
I'm
all
saying,
really
dude.
Like amazing. You know, it they did it once again. They did it last year where I think they brought live people into the theater for the Oscars, and this year they kind of flipped it on its head where they went to a movie theater where they were showing A Wrinkle in Time, and like, you know, they had fucking Army Hammer with a hot dog launcher and shit. It was a funny gag at first, but like, I mean, the people in the theater were just so excited to see people, like they were just like screaming and you couldn't hear anything. You had no idea what was going on. And it kind of went on too long. It was a nice kind of thing. It was kind of a nice gesture or whatever, you know, like giving them all the snacks and stuff like that, which was really fun. But I think that segment kind of dragged on a little bit too long, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, that was one of the parts where I was starting to doze off a little bit. I was kind of like, okay, let's get this moving here. You know, also, even though I didn't see it, Nick, you got a chance to see it. I was glad to see Call Me By Your Name get adapted screenplay, just because of the fact. It did have some diversity in these winners, and I was very happy to see that. Even Coco, which I didn't see it. You didn't see it because we don't really follow that many animated stuff, films on here.
I really, really want to see it now because I've heard nothing but good things about it. So I really do want to check it out. I think, though, that's a good segue, Justin. Actually, we can talk a little bit about some films that we've seen. And I know you got a chance to see a film in a theater I want to get to in a couple of moments here. But I did have the chance to see Call Me By Your Name. And I'm not going to do like full in-depth reviews of these films or anything, but I mean, basically Timothée Chalamet is this young boy named Elio, and Armie Hammer plays this grad student who comes to stay with his family for like 6 weeks. And, you know, they have a little kind of torrid love affair.
They bang.
Yep. They bang. And, you know, a lot of word has really centered around how great Timothée Chalamet is in the film. I will not disagree with that. I think he was fantastic. Overall, I'd probably throw a 7 out of 10 on it. There were some really weird shots, some really weird shot blocking in that film that just didn't make a lot of sense to me, like where they positioned the camera, like they'd have objects obstructing the camera sometimes for no reason. Some shots worked really well. Like there's one scene where Timothée Chalamet's Elio is, you know, he's having sex with a young girl and he's like popping his cherry, basically. And it's this really, really high angle shot where they're kind of off in the corner of the screen and it looks awkward. And I think it's meant to convey the awkwardness of the situation, which was great. It was done to great effect. But there were other shots in the film that were just really, really strangely blocked. A couple of scenes in it I thought that dragged on a little bit too long, probably. But other scenes in it, which, like I said, were fantastic. And Timothée Chalamet, like I said, is excellent in the film. So probably a 7 out of 10 on that one. And I did get a chance to see a couple of other films. You want me to talk about those, or do you want to talk about what you got a chance to see?
Well, I've got a full review for you, man, for the film I got a chance to see. So you tell me what you want me to do. We're live, man. There's no editing on this show.
This is fucking free-for-all, man.
So tell me what you want to do. You tell me now. Or do you want me to wait until the second segment to talk about it?
I don't even know. Are we even going to have a second segment today? I don't even fucking know.
Why not? Why don't you finish up talking about what you're talking about? We'll take a quick break so I can go pee-pee and poo-poo and get another beer, and then I'll talk about the other film.
And belches. I can't cut that. That's what happens. That's what happens when you just let these things be what they're going to be. Okay, so I did get a chance to see two other films. I got the chance to see The Greatest Showman, which I was super excited for. Hugh Jackman starring as P.T. Barnum. Michelle Williams is in it. Zac Efron shows up in it. Zendaya is in it, among, you know, this whole colorful cast of all these freaks, like the Freak Show members and all that stuff. And Justin, do you remember a musical that came out several years ago now starring Daniel Day-Lewis called Nine?
It's been a long, long time, but yes, that does ring a bell. Yeah.
And basically the problem I had with that film was it was really just an excuse to string together a whole bunch of really elaborate musical pieces. For me, a musical has to have a good narrative backbone. It still has to have a good narrative and a good story. And the problem with The Greatest Showman is it doesn't whatsoever. The songs are fantastic. Like a lot of this is, I think it's actually all original music that they wrote for the film. All of the musical set pieces, like all of the performances are fantastic, but they're just strung together by the shittiest, stupidest little plot. It just sucks.
Yeah,
like everything else about
it. Oh, man,
the musical numbers, like if I could give them, like I'd give them like an 8 or a 9 out of 10. Like the musical numbers themselves are fantastic, but everything else about the film, like the little threads that tie those musical numbers together, they're just they're shit.
I gotta ask, Nick,
care about them.
Are we Are we spoiled after La La Land? Are we spoiled because that was so great in every way possible that now...
No, because there are other great musicals that I love, like Dreamgirls. Dreamgirls is a fantastic example of it, where there's a really strong narrative going on, and then they add music to it to enhance it. This was literally just an excuse. And for a film, and I'm sorry to say this, but for a film that wants to champion the little guy, for a film that wants to champion, you know, the people that society frowns upon or looks down on because they're different, you don't get to know fuck all about any of their characters whatsoever. They are set dressing. That's all they fucking are. You never even learn any of their fucking names.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I mean, then, you know, using the subject matter of the whole P.T. Barnum thing, I mean, that was one thing that Loisos had mentioned originally when the trailer first hit, was like, hey, check, man, this person was like a shitbag.
Check.
You know, this person was not a good person. You know, this is not realistic.
He's actually got some moments in the film where he is a shitbag. So they kind of make him a shitbag in some regards in the film, which is fine. But
does he whip elephants, though? Does he doesn't whip any elephants.
No, they shied away from the cruelty to animals thing for the circus in the film. But like I said, you don't get to know anything about any of these characters whatsoever. His character is really literally the only one with any real character development to it whatsoever. And even his is pretty fucking thin. So that film, I would give it like a 5 out of 10. If I smash together the musical score stuff, the musical ratings and stuff, like I said, I would give that like a 9. But like the rest of the movie, I would give like a fucking 2 or a 3. Like legit. Like it's that shitty.
Even the choreography, like the cinematography, all the other stuff.
The technical aspects of the film are fine. But a lot of that is part of those musical numbers. A lot of it is just like, you know, there's a lot of excellent sets and stuff in the film. A lot of excellent production design. But it all gets washed away when you just have literally the most paper thin shit ass script to carry this film from musical number to musical number.
Well, I like Rock of Ages, so what do I know?
Exactly. Exactly.
But then you did get a chance. You got to see that's something else, though, right?
Yeah, I did get a chance to see Paul Thomas Anderson's Phantom Thread, the final performance, so he says, from Daniel Day-Lewis until a script blows by him on the street somewhere and he decides to, you know, come back and do something else. I know you got a chance to see this film as well. And
I did. Yeah,
We were talking about it a little bit pre-show and you mentioned themes of obsession, which I think are fantastic in the film. I love his character. I love Daniel Day-Lewis. He is such a fantastic actor. He's so immersive and he really, really invests you in this character, even though it's something as, you know, this is like dressmaking. Like in, when the fuck was this set? Like the turn of the century or some shit?
1950s London.
Yeah. I mean, like you just like, it's something that's so like inaccessible to me, like as a person, like if I just think about it subject matter wise, but the fact that Paul Thomas Anderson and Daniel Day-Lewis can still invest you in it is great. It's really, really great. But like that said, there's definitely points in the film where it feels a little draggy. You know, it kind of reminds me a lot of There Will Be Blood, which is another collaboration between these two where...
A much better film, I'm going to mention. A
much better film, by the way, yes. But that film has a similarity to this where it's really more about the character than about what's going on in the world. And you're invested in it. You're invested in Day-Lewis as a character and his performance. But at the same time, it just... Paul Thomas Anderson just has this way of really dragging out a scene sometimes, like really dragging it out, and really just you're sitting there and you're like, "Ooh, boy."
To be honest with you, though, I may disagree with you on that. Like, I think that's part of the thing, the charm of the scenes that I liked in Phantom Thread. I like that he does that because not many people do that. It's very rare where someone will linger on a shot purposely, knowing that you, as you're watching it as the viewer, you're like,
and I think it works.
Taking a while. Like, yeah. I mean, not to spoil anything, but like some of the moments where he's adding suspense and you don't really know what's coming. Cause I won't lie to you. I mean, when I watched this movie, I'd seen the trailers and it kind of gave a glimpse into like, you know, there could be some weird shit happening in this movie. I didn't really know. So when I watched, I was like, what's going to happen next? So I had some anticipation for what was going to happen. And when the mushroom stuff started to happen, I was like, oh man, I was getting even more and more intrigued by that. And I mean, I loved that another, whole thing.
A fantastic thing to mention. Vicky Krieps was fantastic in the film.
Oh, brilliant.
Absolutely loved her. She was amazing in the film. And Leslie Manville actually got a Best Supporting Actress nomination for being in this film, and I thought she was really, really great as well. It's a very well-acted film. Like I said, it is very immersive. I would probably slap a 7 out of 10 on it. I did enjoy it.
Wow. We're dead on with ratings with that, actually. For different reasons, I feel like, because it definitely it grabbed me. It had me, but, the films lately that have been really getting me are the films that they grab me, they pull me in, and afterward, they keep making me think, and they want to pull me back in again.
Yeah, which I think it makes a great film. I think it does.
Yeah, and in this case, I mean, I don't think that I would immediately revisit Phantom Thread. I know when I saw the early screening of it, a lot of people were walking out like, I can't wait to see it again. I'm going to come back later this week to watch it again. And for me, like, it was one that I wanted to distance myself from it. It's very intriguing, definitely. But it's something that maybe I'll wait.
Especially the ending, which we won't spoil. But Jesus Christ, the ending of that fucking movie.
Loved the ending. Loved the ending. But I won't lie, me being the dark, sinister lover of all things death and blood, I was really hoping something worse would happen for some reason. I'm like, right. Someone needs to die brutally.
And it kind of made you think that was going to happen at one point, but then it doesn't, which is nice.
Yeah, which I did like that, though.
I would say maybe shave, like, it's 2 hours and 10 minutes long. I would say maybe shave 5 to 10 minutes off of it. I probably would have even been more attached to it. I was very invested in it. I don't want to sell it like I wasn't, but yeah. So there we go. That's what I had a chance to see. I did not get a chance to see The Post, unfortunately. I still do plan on seeing that probably the next week.
You should. You definitely should. It's a great, great time.
But we're going to take a quick little break here. And then when we come back, Justin is going to tell us all about his latest trip to the movie theater.
And we will be right back.
This week in epic film history.
The amazing shots of the bat crotch and the bat ass and the bat nipples. Of course, who could forget the nipples? The suit head nipples.
Oh, dude. Honestly, anytime I watch it, hey, wait a minute.
Oh, oh boy. There's a...
Yeah, that's like what I really like to talk about. They're the bat suit with nipples, and they're so, so sexy. They look like real nipples, Nick.
Justin's Lisp, if you had to give the opening of this film a rating, like where they're showing all the crotches and everything, what would you rate that part of the film?
100 million out of 10.
Ooh.
It's so, so good. I mean, honestly, anytime I watch this movie, I start off and it's not even Clooney. I mean, I know everyone has a thing for Clooney, but Chris O'Donnell in that makeshift Nightwing suit. Oh my God, look at him in that movie. Oh God, he's got that like really nice short buzz haircut that was like totally out by the late 90s, but they still had him wearing it for some reason. But I really like that. And oh my God, he just looks so good in that movie. And Alicia Silverstone, oh, from my favorite movie of all time, Clueless. And she's playing Batgirl. Oh my God, she's so great in this movie. Her performance is like above and beyond. You could consider her like a modern Molly Ringwald in the movie.
Alicia Silverstone is like the quintessential 90s girl in movies. Her and Drew Barrymore, I think.
I love getting to hear the list. But
really, like...
Drew Barrymore, like, she played that sugar girl in Batman Forever.
That is true. She absolutely did. We just finished talking about that, Lisp. I don't know if you heard any of that conversation.
I wasn't really that much around for it. Justin's taking this special medication, and he's doing this treatment to kind of hide me away. It's not working that well, especially when you talk about nipples and asses and cocks and assholes and all kinds of stuff like that that I really like. And Batman and Robin really reminds me of that, especially Arnold, because Arnold's so great during that movie. Nick, did you know that during the making of that movie, when his wife was away on vacation, Arnold impregnated his maid and had an illegitimate child?
I did hear that. I did.
That happened, yeah. My question is, why didn't he name the child Little Freeze or like Mr. Freeze Jr. or something like that? That would have been way much more relevant to what was happening at the time.
Yeah, it would have been. But I mean, I guess...
Little Freeze.
I don't know. I guess he was so busy banging the maid.
Fuck it. No, stop it. Fuck this. Shut up.
Oh my God.
You good?
I miss beating the shit out of the list.
Dude, I think it broke my nose.
I think they need to up the dose on that medication.
Wait, did he talk about that? Did he actually tell you what was going on?
Oh, he knows. He knows everything.
This is worse than I thought.
We are back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Epic Film Guys podcast. And yeah, that was this week in epic film history. The Lisp talking about Batman and Robin. Sometimes I miss the Lisp. Sometimes I really, really miss him. I don't know. He's gonna make a return appearance one of these days to the Epic Film Guys podcast. Justin, are you back with me yet?
I am certainly here, Nick. You are kind of cutting in and out a little bit. Speak for me, my friend. Speak.
No,
speak.
I refuse. Nope. I'm not gonna do it. Woof.
I sucked a dick last night.
Why are you talking? You told me to talk.
You had to do it.
You told me to talk. Why did you talk?
Okay.
Who talks first? Guys, you talk first, I talk first.
I'm gonna take a sip of my beer real quick, and then I'm gonna tell you about a movie I saw.
No, you're not. Don't do it. You're not sipping. This is live, so we have to do this kind of shit to stall for time because I don't have time to edit the fucking episode. I was hoping that 3.5 minutes would be enough, goddammit.
This past Monday, I had the amazing opportunity and privilege to watch an early screening of The Strangers.
Pray at Night. Kill him, hang him,
hit him. Which is slashing its way to your local cinema this weekend.
Ooh.
It's a sequel, literally 10 years in the waiting, Nick. The original Strangers was released in 2008. The original was one of my favorite home invasion horrors in the last few decades. It was a very claustrophobic personal horror starring Liv Tyler and Scott Speedman. And the film followed a young couple who are terrorized by three young masked assailants over the course of an evening at a remote summer home. And this film was inspired by two real-life events, the Manson murders and a bunch of events that happened in California in the late 90s. And it was a true terror, man, that really set itself apart from the most typical slashers. And it kind of rode on the theme of that realism. The killers only terrorized their victims simply because they were home. It really did add that realistic touch, and it made it a breath of fresh air for the genre. I loved the original Strangers film, and I was shocked and surprised at the fact that the original film was made for $9 million, and it ended up grossing $82 million worldwide, $52 million domestic, on $9 million. So I know that it went through development hell as far as the sequel is concerned. It just shocked me that, you know, any, you know, studio couldn't think up an idea to throw a sequel in the works and get it onto the big screen. I mean, with horror sequels, especially sequels to profitable films, usually they get churned out the next year. So I had been waiting for this film for so long, and then obviously 10 years later, we're finally getting a sequel, The Strangers Pray at Night. And, you know, it's not like there's much hype behind this film outside of true horror fans because of the fact that it's been so long. We're in this day and age where we do get sequels 10, 15, 5 or so years after the original film, even longer. I mean, shit, dude, we're getting a Karate Kid sequel. How many years in the, like 30 some years? I know you're excited for that. It'll be YouTube Red though. So, I mean, we know what that means, but even so,
means no one will see it.
I mean, I'll watch it and I'll do a full review on the show just for you.
I bet you will.
But for real, I mean, it's a strange thing that's going on in Hollywood right now where they're like, hey, let's make a sequel to this film. And I'm like, dude, that film was made in like 1963. These, like,
super old property. Well, even television's doing it, too. I mean, we talked about it a little bit in the pre-roll or in the pre-show. But, you know, we were talking about Roseanne's going to be doing the revival. And we got the trailer for that during the Oscars.
Yeah, but like, I mean, that to me makes more sense because that show is huge.
Will and Grace revival. I mean, a lot of these shows and, you know, films, it's, I don't know.
Lack of ideas.
We're tired
of
Hollywood doing all these reboots and remakes of everything. So now instead they're just doing fucking straight up revivals of everything.
Yeah, like 20 fucking years later. But for me, like, again, that's why it kind of stifled any kind of huge anticipation I had for a sequel to The Strangers. That and the first film doesn't really lend itself well to being a sequel. It's a very claustrophobic, singular focus in the first film. You know, these three crazy people masked, brutally terrorize this couple. And I loved it. It's done very differently than anything else that had been done prior to it. And it was very special as far as the genre is concerned. A gem, I may consider it. So here we are with the sequel here. And This is about a family's road trip that takes a dangerous turn when they arrive at a secluded mobile home park to stay with some relatives, and they find it mysteriously deserted. They're on their way to take their troubled teenage daughter to an expensive prep school due to her recent outbursts and bad behavior. So when the darkness covers this trailer park, three masked psychopaths, of course, pay them a visit to test the family's every limit as they struggle to survive. This film actually surprised me a little bit in the sense that it was a fucking great fun time to watch, Nick. The First Strangers is not like one of those slasher films that I sit down to watch, you know, 11:30 at night by myself after a few beers, or maybe I'm eating some junk food I shouldn't be eating, and I'm like, I'm just gonna just love this shit. I'm just gonna sit here, indulge this, and just, you know, zone out to it. This actually, the original wasn't like that movie. That movie was immersed you in this small little home as they were terrorized, and it was scary. It was legit scary. Like, anyone that I know that wasn't a huge horror fan that watched the original got really scared by it, because it happens all the time. There's no supernatural elements at all. It's just people that terrorize you in your home. And that happens every day in this country. People get burglarized. People get murdered in their home. And our home is supposed to be the place where we're safe. So when that's violated, it's the most frightening thing you could ever imagine. The sequel expands on that by giving a larger area. This is a full mobile home, so it kind of trades off the claustrophobic feel of one little home to this huge area that they're in. The film stars Christina Hendricks as Cindy, who is the mother of this young girl, Martin Henderson as the father, Mike, and Kinsey is played by Bailey Madison, who she's done a lot of stuff, a lot of child acting. She is the standout here. I'll make this clear right here. The young actors in this film stand out so well. Unfortunately, Nick, the adults in this film are completely lackluster. I feel so bad for Christina Hendricks. Yeah. Seriously,
what happened
so
to her
bad.
Since Mad Men?
Dude, she's been in Bad Santa 2, and she gets banged in an alleyway in that film. Okay? That's one thing. And then she's in this film, and I'm not going to spoil too much, but let's just say she doesn't stick around for that long. It's really upsetting for me because I love her so much. She was a huge standout in my favorite show of the past 10 years, Mad Men. She was brilliant as Joan in that show. She had so much depth of character.
Amazing.
Great performance. And in this, you know, she's just kind of playing the mom, and I get what she's just trying to get work, man. I understand that. But seeing her in this film for such a short amount of time was kind of unfortunate for me. And the guy that plays the father, man, Martin Henderson, the stalest fucking dude I've seen in a horror film. And I mean, and I get it, okay? Seriously. I mean, I expect bad acting. I actually look forward to some bad acting in my horror films to some extent. But this guy was the weakest link. There's a scene in the film, Nick, okay? Again, no spoiler, where he has to show immense pain. He's going through a very severe traumatic event, and he's been injured. And the guy has to go on for like a 3-minute period with no cut to the scene. And he just can't do the scene. Like, it's obvious to me that, okay, you don't really look like you're hurting that bad, even though you have a giant piece of something sticking out of your body and you're bleeding profusely all over the ground. He's not that good. But again, the kids stand out here. And really what makes this film entertaining is that it kind of gives an energetic feel to the slasher and the home invasion. No longer is it just confined to the home. There's a giant truck that our main mask killer, man in the mask, as they call him, is chasing these characters around.
The mask?
The man behind the mask, and he's out of control, and he's certainly out of control in this movie. We do have our three favorite slashers in this film. We've got Dollface, Man in the Mask, and Pinup Girl back in this. But again, it's not confined to one little place, so the terror can happen anywhere in this trailer park. The only one thing you think to yourself when shit starts hitting the fan, and as Loy Sauce would say, hijinks ensue. Is that why don't they just try to leave the trailer park? I mean, it's because it's in the middle of nowhere. It is a trailer park. It's kind of like a camp area type thing where you would like go on vacation. There's like a pool, and but people also live there. I don't know. It's kind of a strange thing. But it's obviously like not the season where a lot of people would be there. So there's like no one there. And it's scary. So why are you going to run in the dark in the road when you know people are out there that could possibly kill you? The kills are awesome in this thing. The gore is over the top fantastic for horror fans. I had a great time with this. And there's a lot of, as I would call, Nick, Carpenterisms, maybe even slightly forced Carpenterisms. We do see the vehicle that our man in the mask drives around in the film catch on fire. And there are a lot of homages to Christine, which is one of my favorite Carpenter films. And the score in the film actually kind of slightly apes the theme from John Carpenter's The Fog, which I didn't mind that much because it fits the film. They definitely are taking it back. They're trying to make pretty much everything these days, Nick, feel kind of like a retro 80s feel, which I didn't necessarily mind. I feel like at times it kind of came off as a little forced, especially when you consider the first film had none of that. You know, there's a lot of popular culture songs in this. There's a ton of songs from the 80s in this, and then modern songs that have that retro synth pop sound to them. Some work, some don't. One of which, one of my favorite scenes, It works to perfection when there's a little battle in a swimming pool with neon lights and neon palm trees around it. It was fantastic. It takes some interesting turns here. It does some different things that you wouldn't expect. And for a horror fan, I highly recommend you take the time and buy a ticket to see this in the cinema. Very rarely do we see a slasher hit the cinema widespread like this in such a larger release. You know, for what it is, it's not going to be huge, but you'll be able to catch this at your local cinema, and I definitely recommend doing it, especially if you love slashers and especially if you liked the first film. Support this because it's a great fun time. It's nowhere near as good as the first film, and it's not perfect, but I would highly recommend it as a horror fan. I would give The Strangers Pray at Night a 7 out of 10 rating. Great, brutal, fun time. You'll laugh. And there's some good suspense to be had, so check it out.
All right, well, there we go. So check it out, horror fans. Probably not my kind of film.
Not you. Definitely not you.
Definitely.
No, not you.
Definitely. I told Lois Haas to
see it. Lois Haas unfortunately did not get to catch it, but I was pretty awesome that I got to see an early screening of this because it's very rare where there's like such a big screening event for, you know, a sequel to a film that was a moderate success from 10 years ago. But dude, it was a packed house, man. It was an awesome time. People were clapping and cheering. And there are a few what the fuck moments like, dude, just shoot him. Just shoot him. Just shoot him. Just shoot him. But we get our payoff. I'll just say that much. There's great payoff to be had. You'll be satisfied, horror buffs. Go see it. It's bloody-tastic.
Well, we're going to wrap out of the second segment just as quickly, it feels like, as we've rolled into it. We're going to run into another quick break here, and then we'll be back to finish out the show, Justin.
Yeah, man. We'll be right back.
Oh, shit. I didn't have the sound to see. This is the kind of thing
you guys got to see and hear our flubs firsthand. Now you got to hear it again. There it is.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
More this week in epic film history. What killed the dinosaurs?
The Ice Age!
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the last film in our little retrospective here for Batman. It is time for 1997's Batman and Robin. And Justin,
Batman and Robin,
first thoughts on the film?
Honestly, Nick, I could not praise a film any more than I praise Batman and Robin.
Yeah,
this
I agree.
Is what I would call a cinematic masterpiece, unlike anything that had ever come before or that we've seen since. This film is beautiful. This is just such a masterpiece that I think every single person in the entire world should see this film at least one time in their life. I wish they would re-release this in IMAX 3D. So
I wish they would do it every year.
Every year. They should do it once a year.
They do it with Rocky Horror.
Yeah, and I think that, honestly, this is a film that should be celebrated for generation after generation after generation. Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin, ladies and gentlemen, is the best Batman film of all time. It is the best comic book related film of all time. It is above and beyond anything that we see now today or that we saw prior to it, Nick.
Yeah, it's probably close to the best film of all time. Let's really get right out in front of that, because this is
sorry, Nick, you're totally right. I completely misspoke. It is the best film of all time.
Bryan Singer, after an all-night bender of doing drugs and touching kids, whatever the fuck else he was doing,
squats down oh. over the toilet and just takes a fat, wet shit all over everything, all the goodwill that he built in Days of Future Past. He puts Apocalypse, who's one of the most iconic X-Men villains of all time. I'm not a comic reader, but I was a huge fan of the animated series, and Apocalypse was such an imposing, amazing villainous presence in that film. And you put him in this film, and you put Oscar Isaac, who's a fantastic actor, in that makeup.
An amazing
actor.
And then
you give him nothing to fucking do whatsoever.
You know, we see comic book movies year in and year out. The
lots of them these days,
The spectacle that they are is kind of lost steam, where, you know, you're no longer as excited as you used to be. They're no longer as special because we get them. We know they're coming. There's so many Marvel movies. You know, we have DC, you know, scavenging their way through the franchises that they have and trying to make something good out of them. And, you know, and we have Fox, who's had hit or miss films. We've had Sony, who just basically said, we don't know what to do with Spider-Man. We're going to hand over half of it to Marvel and just make what we can out of it.
They had to throw their hands up and be like, we have no fucking clue what we're doing.
You know, it's no longer an event for me. It's just something that as a we're a podcast, we're film critics, we discuss movies, that we have to see it now, no matter which character it is. So, you know, they're good, they're fine, but this is the first time, Nick, where I was so emotionally invested in the characters that I was watching on screen that at the ending of this film, I cried tears, not just one, but I continuously cried.
And hey, don't say I didn't show up. I came in for one last shot and told you to all the fuck damn yourself. It. Fuck you. God, I'm done. Fuck yourself. It. I hate you. Fuck off.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Epic Film Guys podcast. And once again, some more EFG history. Last year on the show, this time reviewing Logan, which made both of our top 10 of the year list. Or wait, did it make, you know, it made yours. Yeah, it made yours. I think. I don't even remember. You're gone again, aren't you? This is what happens, man. He disappears. I don't even know where he's gone. He might have let the Hopester in. The Hopester might be coming to listen to himself and then be live on the show for all I know. Nope, I don't know where he is. I don't know where he is. So you get a whole lot of Nick, folks. If listen, this is something, this is one of the things that I kind of want to play with our format, because I've got the tools. I've got the soundboard. I've got all the different files here where I can do all this different stuff. And he just messaged me on Skype. Did I lose you? No, I'm still here. I'm still here. I'm talking. Hello.
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 I do have you.
You forced me to try to entertain our audience all by myself, and we all know I'm not up to the task.
There you are. Holy crap. I just didn't hear you. This whole recording live thing, I mean, it's weird, I kind of like it, but man, I'm talking to a brick wall here. I'm talking to myself.
That's what I was asking our audience. I was like, should...
I'm talking to the ghost of the list, man.
Ooh, the ghost.
His spirit.
The ghost of the list. I was, you know, I want to play with our format a little bit and play with different things. This is one thing I've really been thinking about doing more often, because we can just kind of go in. We can, whatever happens, happens. Whatever is part of the recording is part of the recording, and it just goes in. And, you know, that includes all the random fucked up shit that just happens between when we're taking breaks and we're doing all sorts of different stuff. And
I didn't suck a dick last night.
That was a thing that That's happened, right. Apparently. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But
I didn't. But, you know, it's about time where I like to get nuts on the show, Nick. I don't like to eat them.
I don't have the sound drop on the board for that. So you want to get nuts now? Let's get nuts.
I like to eat almonds that are nuts. Come on. Let's get nuts. I can't even. That's right.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, prepare yourself.
For
just
what?
To let you know, the new Death Wish starring Bruce Willis, directed by Eli Roth, hit theaters last week, and none of us saw it.
Wait, I thought another belch was going to watch it. He didn't watch it yet?
He was supposed to see it and give us a full EFG review, but of course, he did not.
Is he scared?
He did not watch the film.
He's scared to watch it, isn't he?
No, he's just, I don't know what he's doing. He had a date on Saturday or something. Whoa. He went and saw Annihilation the second time. Yeah, exactly. I really don't know what's going on in the world of Voice House. I barely see the kid. He's been ditching me. He did not make my Oscars party. He opted for, you know, doing laundry instead and washing his hair. I don't know what he's doing. I really don't. But we are, ladies and gentlemen, giving a digital code away for Michael Winner's original classic Death Wish, starring Charles Bronson.
Yes.
That's right. How upset I was, Nick, when I got this steelbook in the mail. So I already owned it on Blu-ray, whatever, but I got it because it's a steelbook. To have Bronson on a steelbook is awesome. On the back of the cover, Nick, they used an image from Death Wish 3, which is not Death Wish, which is also a huge studio flub because Paramount put out the Blu-ray. They don't own the rights to Death Wish 3. MGM does. And they used an image that they don't own on a Blu-ray.
Wow. So
I commented it on their page. I don't think they give a fuck, though. But yes.
Jesus Christ. Get your shit together, Paramount.
The Bronson. We are going to give away a digital code for the original Death Wish.
And it comes with a full pack of sausage.
You better believe it, damn it. Send us your address. We'll send you some moldy sausage from the Hopester. But the question I have, the trivia question I have for you is, which Jurassic Park alumni was a goon in both Charles Bronson's Death Wish and a later film, St. Ives? Now, this is someone that has been in one or numerous Jurassic Park films, and he plays a goon in Death Wish and Charles Bronson's later film, St. Ives.
It was Laura Dern, wasn't it?
Yeah, she raped and she killed Paul Kersey's wife and daughter. Yeah.
Anyway, how is your sex life?
Oh, ooh, so politically incorrect, Nick. God, oh my God. That's why I love our show.
Who gave me control of this soundboard?
I don't know.
Emily,
like, as we saw in EFG history, it's been a year and I'm still dealing with it. So, hey, if you want to win this digital code, you know you want it. It's Death Wish. It's the first Death Wish. It's the best Death Wish. Minus Death Wish 3, of course. Go over to the Hopester's Dumpster. If you are not a fan, part of that group, head over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/epicfilmguys. Like that page if you haven't liked it already, and then ask to join the Hopester's Dumpster, which is the official Epic Film Guys
fan group. It's right in the banner. You can click. There's a link for group right in the banner on the on the Facebook page.
Facebook's getting cool.
Or you can just go to facebook.com/groups/epicfilmguys, because that's the URL for the Hopester's Dumpster.
Yes, you can go to, and the Hopester is a dirty, rotten, homeless piece of shit that we hope doesn't show up on this show again. He ruined my McDonald's trip, man. I didn't even get to eat anything. I was starving the whole way home from Columbus because of him. So, but yes, if you want that digital code, head up the Hopester's Dumpster.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, that's going to pretty much do it for the show tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Like I said, I'm going to play around with our format a little bit here and there. And like I said, I've got the tools to do this kind of thing. We're going to see how it comes out. We're going to see how it sounds in the end. And, you know, see how you guys react to it. So if this is something you enjoyed, if this is something you want to hear more of, let us know. If not, whatever. We don't care. We're going to keep doing whatever the fuck we do anyway, because that's just what we do.
Exactly. We're going to do what we want to do. But do me a favor, though. Any of you meticulous people that like to count my uhs and ums, count how many that I did in this episode, and then tell Nick and prove to him that I don't say it as much as he thinks I do.
Sucked a dick last night.
All right, that's enough, Wayne. All right, that's enough.
I think your ums have got to be up there probably just about as high as people talking about dicks on this show. I don't know where they come from. I don't know how these sound clips keep dropping into the show. I don't know. I'm going to do a contest, I think, probably like maybe later this month or next month, for people to send us their absolute best I sucked a dick last night, and we'll vote on it, and we'll vote, and we'll send the winner maybe a free Epic Film Guys t-shirt. What do you think?
I'm down, dude.
I think we got to do it. I think we should do it. They can either do it like really sad and depressed.
I sucked a dick last night.
They're all remorseful about it and everything. Or, you know, they can sing a song about it.
I sucked a dick last night.
It can basically be whatever you want. Like I said, I think maybe we'll do that toward the end of the month or something like that. So start prepping those vocal cords to talk about dicks. If you want to win a free Epic Film Guys
t-shirt. Sing it, baby. Sing it. But that's about it for us on the Epic Film Guys podcast. We're done. I'm done. I can't believe I didn't even get through my second beer. This is great.
Man, I finished my Dragon's Milk. It was delicious, and I probably will have that half-baked while I slap together the show and get it online for our waiting audience. We love you guys. You guys are amazing. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show, for being here, for always supporting us in every single thing that we do. We absolutely love you. Speaking of supporting us, over on the Facebook page, I have posted a huge update for Livestream for the Cure 2.0, a bunch of different news and everything. We're going to be getting the page up over at the Cancer Research Institute for early donations really soon. Justin's working really, really hard on those graphics. We're going to try to get those done by the end of the month so we can roll out some merchandise related to the event, and all the proceeds from that merchandise will also go toward the cause. Again, we're trying to raise $5,000 for cancer research. We can do it. 30 hours of live stream content. It's going to be absolutely amazing. We've got a lot of great shows. Great, great friends of the show, like Paul from The Countdown is going to be here. Netflix and Spool is going to be here. We're going to do one of their dick picks, which is really fun. They pick a word out of the dictionary, and then they pick a film on Netflix when they search for that word, and they watch it. And whatever it ends up being, it ends up being. Dan watched Spotlight this week because of his dick pick, the film that won Best Picture 2 years ago now. Yeah, so you never know quite what you're going to get when you just kind of randomly roll the word generator. So it's going to be absolutely amazing. Please, please, please mark your calendars for that. It's May 18th through the 20th. You can also hear me coming up on the 14th of March. So that is next Wednesday, I believe. Yes, am I correct? Yes, I am.
That's correct. That is the evening that I'll be hosting the screening of Charles Bronson's 10 to Midnight at Alamo Drafthouse.
Oh,
so yes,
my God.
I do know the date.
Justin won't be watching, but you guys can watch over. I'll post the links up over in social media as we get a little bit closer to it. But I will be on the Sunshine Summit with Heather from the Sunshine and Power Cuts podcast. She's a podcaster from New Zealand who is going to be doing this whole huge, amazing event over the course of like a week, where she's going to have all sorts of different podcasters on, talking to them, interviewing them. And it's going to be a lot of great, great fun. So please consider coming out for that. I believe it's at 9 p.m. Eastern, if I am correct. I'll post up the link over on social media, because I don't remember the exact time right now. And we're live, so I can't be like, hold please. Like, sometimes we'll do that during an episode, and I'll be like, hang on, let me look it up, and then random blah 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 typing and shit, and then I'll look it up and cut that whole part out.
I can't do it now. Nope, not at all.
Can't even do it, because it just ruins things, man. But yeah, thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, very, very much for listening to the show, for supporting us. You guys are the titties.
We wouldn't be able to do it without you.
Or the ball sackes, whatever you prefer, man. We're equal opportunity. Yeah. Actually, I think we're not.
Certainly,
I think
are.
We love dicks. Aren't way we? More than anything else.
No, you do. I'm equal opportunity. But yeah, for myself, for Nick, for Loy Sauce.
It's not time for sound checks, Loy Sauce. The show is over. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening, and we will see you
at the movies.
Network. You can check out more shows like it at podfixnetwork.com.